Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
Now, you guys are listening to this on the 30th of March, and it is episode 53. We're recording this on the 28th. We've had a few weeks in the row now where we've sort of recorded the day early, and now we're just getting arrogant, I think.
We're having a wacky Wednesday.
Ooh, very wacky. Cool, but we do have a huge slash wacky show for you guys coming up. Obviously, last week we had part one of the Dennis Prager interview. That was really awesome. We've had a lot of great feedback for it. Part two for you guys coming up. It's a little more upbeat, a little more positive thinking because, you know, I think last week's one ended with him saying how terrible it is for conservatives out there. This one, we start to get a little more optimistic about the future. So hopefully you guys stick around for that one.
Got to listen to section two.
Yes. And we're also going to be talking to IPA campus coordinator Renee Gorman. Good friend of the show. People love having her on. Obviously, my guys might have seen that today, meaning Wednesday. This is getting confusing. So Wednesday for you guys, she wrote. and for us, I guess. It's also Wednesday
this
for
is,
us.
My brain's about to explode. Yeah. It's like 5 o'clock as well. We normally do it in the morning.
It's a lot of different things. But anyway, so Renee Gorman on Wednesday. This week, she wrote an article in the Daily Telegraph talking about, you guys might have seen that the University of Sydney Student Union is enforcing these gender quotas and other different quotas for their debating teams. And Renee obviously is going to go whack on what she thinks about that.
Mm-hmm.
Really fun chat.
Great interview.
Yeah, so stick around for that as well. So Pete, let's talk the major news stories of this week.
Yeah.
Do you want to lead with ball tampering? Because I'm kind of sick of talking about it, but...
It seems like it's been such a... It's really captured the imagination of the nation.
It's been the front page of the papers.
Nina won't shut up about it.
4 days in a row.
Yeah, right.
Cricket tragic Nina. As our resident podcast expert on cricket, yep. Pete, not Nina. Pete, what... Like, if there's any person alive who doesn't know what happened yet, brief explanation of what happened and what you as the cricket tragic think about the issue.
Yeah, well, thanks for calling me an expert. You obviously didn't see the semi, but what...
The semi-final, yeah.
So what happened was an Australian cricketer got caught tampering with the ball.
He scored one more than I did for that match.
Well, thanks, mate.
Yeah,
thanks.
Sorry.
Who got caught tampering with the ball, which basically just means mucking it up so it swings a bit through the air. That was Cameron Bancroft, I'm going to say. And so actually, as you have pointed out, this probably will change at the moment, but... It's going to be Dave Warner, Steve Smith and Cameron Bancroft. So the captain, vice-captain and the guy who did it will be suspended. And at this point, we actually don't know how long they're going to be suspended for, but I think people will probably find out tomorrow.
Yes, which is yesterday. Viewers,
Thursday.
Absolute vortex. But anyway, so yeah, obviously we're recording this on Wednesday. We don't quite know, like there's going to be stuff that's different from the time you guys hear it. But one thing that won't change, hopefully, is Pete's opinion. So what do you think should happen?
Opinions, well... At the start, this was like, I was like, oh, this is quite nice that people still care about stuff like fairness and playing by the rules and having integrity and this idea that we play hard but that we play fair. And I thought it was great that there was people that were saying, you know, this is terrible. But then it clearly, the whole thing started to clearly gain the momentum of a phenomenon that we're all very familiar with. Of course, the confected outrage machine that these guys had committed a crime against humanity in trying to cheat in a game. And now I think, so it's taken on that. I don't know what's going to happen, so it's hard for me to say what I think of the penalty, because I don't know what the penalty is yet. But we are clearly allowing bloody ex-English cricketers and journos to ramp this up. We should not rush into a decision about these guys based on these bloody Nasser Hussain and Kevin Peterson, who are basically live-tweeting the whole thing.
They would be absolutely loving it.
Oh, they love it, because, I mean, you know, they've been...
They are tweeting about how outraged they are through glasses of red wine and tears in their eyes of laughter.
Exactly right. So we just have to make sure we don't overreact. But I did say it was cool that people still get the rules. I will say a lot of non-cricket people have weighed in on this. Ball tampering is like relatively common. Like a lot of people have been done for ball tampering over the last few years.
And I did see,
like, you know, Tendulkar and
And the opposition captain.
Yeah, Faf du Plessis.
Yeah, in this test series.
Most
and also, it's a weird one in that there's so many ways of ball tampering that is allowed, but a very arbitrary line is what isn't allowed.
Yeah, I've been contemplating that. So you like to wipe saliva on the ball.
which is also like a really creepy.
Yeah, and then you rub it on your thigh.
And you can like throw the ball so it drops short, and that scuffs up the ball a bit.
Yeah.
So
you can do that when you're fielding, but you can't do that when you're giving the ball back to the bowler.
Yeah.
Like if we do that in our games, right, after a while, and then they say, you know, they say you have to, like, they tell us to stop doing that.
So you do it as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if Pete can be starting to dish out these
Yeah, I mean, look, and, you know, I play park cricket and we appear when we know it's not out, and I'm sure the Australian cricketers do as well. And, you know, I mean, everyone cheats. It's like, why is this? Anyway, I don't want to get caught up in all that. But, look, and I will point out this is torn apart the IAPA office. Andrew Bushnell very much in my camp. John Roskam says, you know,
sack them all.
Suspend them for a year. So, yeah. That's it. That's
That's all I got. I don't really have a whole lot to contribute on this one. I'm not the biggest cricket tragic in the world, but I will point out that I called it from the start that it was all Dave Warner's idea.
Yeah, so you
were pretty happy with that.
9 million Australians, but we need
but Robin. Zero in that IPA Slack channel discussion. I was the only one on that one.
Fair enough, but so, I mean, we need Robert Toombs. Robert Toombs was here last week. Compared Western civilization to the rules of cricket.
Toombs would have some opinions on this.
How annoying is this? Didn't happen last week. Toombs could have given us
would have given
set the whole country straight.
Scrap, you would have ripped up his speech, shot from the hip.
Yep. Anyway,
cool. So we'll talk some other economic stuff. Oh, well, some actual economic stuff.
When you say more, you mean actually.
Yeah, so we'll talk some economic stuff, some actually important stuff. So obviously something that's been happening in the background of politics for a long time now is the idea of corporate tax cuts. Obviously you guys would have seen Trump reduce it from like 35 to 21, I think was the ending number. Yeah, okay. So big cuts, and there was the idea that maybe the Australian government should get off its butt and do the same thing.
Yeah.
Simon Breeny, obviously, you guys would have seen. Well, it might not have been Simon. It might have been someone who I probably should know. But one of my colleagues, the faceless masses of people that I work with, put out a parliamentary research brief. It's still available online. Daniel Wilde, that was it. 5 reasons we should cut corporate tax. You guys can still read that. Now, what's happened this week is that the Turnbull, this is coming from The Guardian, so apologies if this... Apologies. But the Turnbull government has pulled its legislation to cut the corporate tax rate for big business from 30 to 25% until the May budget session because it lacks the numbers to pass a politically unpopular measure this week. Very annoying day. Like, this is going to eventually hurt Australia because we're going to start losing business investment, which is not, like, obviously there is a huge cabal of people that really are loving the fact that we are delaying this. I'm going to quote two of them. So, Stephen Koukalos, I think is how you pronounce it, the former economic advisor to Gillard, goes, this is great. Higher tax to GDP ratio is linked to higher national happiness. Facts from the OECD countries.
That's not a fact.
Even if it is, let's just tax 100% of everyone. Yeah. We'd be so happy. Could you imagine how happy we'd be?
I'm just checking your paper. Is it?
But that is an actual tweet from Stephen. You can look it up at the Kook. As Evan points out on when he's sent it around, it is a wonder that it's not listed as a satire account. We also got Ben Oquist, obviously foe of Georgina Downer on Sky News occasionally on weekends. He says the economic case for these company tax cuts never stacked up. The benefits were largely foreign shareholders with huge long-term revenue costs to the budget. When in doubt, just attack foreign shareholders. It's always a bugbear of people that sounds shady and stuff like that. So just go for that. So obviously the reason this stinks is because...
Stinks.
It just stinks. As we've said consistently from the start, company tax rates help everyone. Companies aren't just companies. They're also the workers that people made up with. And if you just need to look at what happened after the Donald Trump tax cuts in the US, obviously a whole bunch, hundreds of companies giving their workers bonuses, giving them extra conditions and stuff, they can finally start reinvesting in their own workers. And Australian workers won't be able to appreciate that.
No.
And eventually when big businesses are tossing up between Australia and our competitors as to where to invest and we lose out because of the high business tax rates, a lot more potential workers are hurt.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's all very true, James. Who would have thought that the brave Turnbull government that gave themselves 317 years to cut the business tax rates in increments of 0.1% down 5% would... lose the stomach for the fight.
Who would have thought?
Blow me down with a feather. The other thing I did notice from that Guardian piece that you put through was that Turnbull apologised to the Business Council of Australia because he was giving a speech and said, we won't give up. Business Council of Australia, they don't care about business. I mean, they're the biggest corporatist swamp dwellers out there.
Absolutely. I also like the BCA confirmed, this is also from the Guardian, so BCA confirmed on Tuesday evening it would launch a new advertising blitz in an attempt to boost its stocks for the Australian public and get people back on side for corporate tax rates. Right in the nick of time, fellas.
Yeah. Should be right.
Hit it as the issue was developing. Cool. So that's all we got for that. So this is just breaking. Oh, we're back down this damn vortex. This is breaking right now / 2 days ago for people listening. And now I'm thinking, like, what if people listen over the weekend because it's a long weekend? But anyway,
Wednesday. Look, it's happening Wednesday.
Sorry. Last week, we told you guys about Count Dankula, the Scottish YouTuber who filmed his dog doing the Nazi symbol, got convicted of a hate crime, and he's awaiting sentencing. So Jonathan Pye is a UK comedian, rose to fame when he did the whole here's why Hillary lost the election, and it was like he just finished a news scoop and was giving the camera guy what he thought. Anyway, so he's coming out to Australia soon, or maybe not. Because he sounds like he's in a bit of hot water. So he tweeted out, "Hi Comedy World, me again. Don't worry, looks like I won't be around for long. And I'm sorry, you were right. There really is no problem with free speech in this country. None of you should be terrified." And then he posted a photo of a Facebook conversation with the some guy and also the Met Contact Centre. So obviously the Metropolitan Police. So the guy tweeted out Jonathan Pye's video that he made in defense of Count Dankula.
Mm-hmm.
So Jonathan Pye talking about how you should actually be able to make a joke, even if it is in poor taste.
Yeah. Or at least your dog should be able to.
Well, yes. So the person complains, "Hi there, a few days ago, an internet..." single quotation marks, comedian, made an extremely offensive remarks where he imitated being a Nazi and satirized the Holocaust. As a Jewish person, not only does this cause unimaginable offense, but I believe breaches various hate speech laws that others have been rightly convicted for. This means the man's online personality is known as Jonathan Pye. He's a video. The offensive content starts at 3:50, so just like... here is the offensive content.
Yeah.
Anyway, but...
That's the police tweeting that out.
No. So that's the guy. The Metropolitan Police has responded, "Hi, it's understandable how this would cause distress. If you feel personally offended by this, we can arrange to come and see you to take a report, or you can report it here and post the link."
So they're just shopping around for a bit of business.
They're looking for the next case.
Well, I mean, Nina's take on the dog thing was very popular last week.
Yes.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So you should be careful.
Why? Because
you stuck up for the dog. Apparently, sticking up for the dog can land you in hot
obviously
water.
Obviously, no one cares about the dog anyway. So
people care about
I'm
that
safe,
dog.
I'm safe, people.
But
super creepy.
To a serious point, like this is why free speech advocates have to defend scoundrels. It's because eventually they come for the people that defend scoundrels. It's like if you don't defend Count Dankula, you also can't defend Jonathan Pye, because there's like, well, Jonathan Pye was defending Count Dankula, and if Count Dankula's guilty, therefore Jonathan Pye should be guilty.
Yeah.
It's crazy. We're right. This is what happens when you don't defend scoundrels. Eventually, normal people are going to get the Metropolitan Police snooping around for the next big complaint.
Yeah, and this, like someone sitting there on a social media account, like trying to cook up some business whilst actual crimes are being committed, is pretty galling.
Yeah, pretty galling. So... on that, we'll go to the slightly more optimistic Dennis Prager part of the interview. So thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. We are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, and our Hey What Did I Miss email. If you guys are listening on iTunes, make sure to leave us a 5-star review. Put a tip in the comments section, maybe something for the show, maybe your own Q&A clap moment. And Nina, how can people join the IPA?
Just visit our website at ipa.org.au and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become our member and you can receive our invitations to our exclusive events and also weekly emails.
Very cool. All right.
Cool. Anyway, let's talk about something slightly more optimistic. We've seen, look, Prager University is obviously wildly popular, 1.2 billion views, you know, and 60% of those people are under the age of 35, I believe. Do you see, so there's Prager on the one hand, and then we've got people like Jordan Peterson who are also very wildly popular with young people. Do you see young people actually sort of wanting to be challenged and wanting to hear the kind
actually,
of ideas?
Actually, yes.
Okay.
And I am not an up... just let me explain, because I also do a lot of work on happiness.
Okay.
I've written a book on it, and I do an hour of my show a week since 1999 on happiness. Very important subject to me, because I think it's a moral attribute, not just an emotional state. And so there are two definitions for optimist. If you look in the dictionary, it's very interesting. Definition number one is one who believes everything will turn out well. I am not definition one.
Okay.
But definition two I am, and that is one who sees the positive in any given situation. So I am about to tell you that I am optimistic guardedly on number one, vis-a-vis the next generation, in the sense that if we can get to them, they're open to hearing. Not all. Many have been truly already. They're indoctrinated in America beginning elementary school. I don't know what the term you use for school is.
Yeah, primary school. But people,
primary
yeah.
school, yes. And then what do you say for high school?
High school.
High school as well. So as I've now begun to say on my radio show, high schools are actually worse than universities right now. Because at least at a university, every so often a speaker will show up who is conservative. There may be riots, but he or she shows up. But I'm very rarely invited to high schools. I'm regularly invited to universities. High schools don't want... I spoke on happiness at a prestigious high school in where I live in Southern California. And it took years to get permission, and I spoke on happiness. Mm. And that was controversial.
Yeah.
So but if we can get to them, they will say that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's all I ask. I am conservative because it makes sense. It doesn't make sense to raise the minimum wage and have more people go out of business so they hire fewer and then the government supports more people. That's the reason. That's the only reason I'm against the keeping increasing the minimum wage. Oh, by the way, I got to tell you, I am tweeting out a picture from one of your trams. I took it yesterday. I took this picture. Tell me if you're familiar with it. It's some guy, an angry guy in the picture, and it's about the horrible notion that medical care should be for profit.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I haven't seen the ad, but
So I'm tweeting it out to the United States. That's a classic example. So in other words, it's a bad idea for people to make money helping people medically. Mm. You know how stupid that is? It's just stupid. It's immoral and stupid. So let me ask them a question. If it's immoral to make money on people's health care, why is it moral to make money on people's food?
That's right.
You need food more than health care.
Mm-hmm.
Or housing. And the truth is, they don't believe you should make money on those things. They find it all of that noxious. They don't think, they feel. To understand the left, all one must understand is they do not think, they feel. I feel for the poor, I feel for the indigenous people, I feel for blacks, I feel for you name it. I feel for the Palestinians. What is right is not a left-wing question. Whom do you feel for? Is the question.
So with this sort of, with young people at the moment, a theme that comes up on this podcast a lot is that it's now sort of, you know, revolutionary or sort of like the teenage rebellion is to actually be conservative or classical liberal when it was the left for so long because the previous...
I'm not that optimistic. I hope you're right, but they don't understand. They have been, I believe the left is involved in child abuse. First of all, telling boys and girls you're not a boy or you're not a girl until you affirm it later in life. I'm sure it's true here, but I know it's true in the United States. Teachers are told not to tell first graders, six-year-olds, not to call them boys and girls. You can't impose a gender identity. In the New York subway system, our tube in New York, you say subway or tube for the train?
Just the train. Yeah. We don't really have...
Train. Mm. Well, neither. The underground train in New York, the New York subway system, has abolished... So has the tube in England, in London. They no longer make announcements, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm. And national airline carriers made the same announcement last week that we're going to stop referring to passengers as ladies and gentlemen.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's
what,
right.
What, Qantas?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Qantas?
Yeah.
Virgin Australia?
Yeah, Qantas, but yeah.
Qantas.
Yeah, I don't know if Virgin's done it.
Yeah, I expected it from Qantas, yes. That's astonishing. So what are they going to ask then on passport? With what gender do you identify? Male, female, none, non-binary, cisgender? What will Qantas do now?
I wasn't in that meeting, so I don't know what they sort of decided on, but we'll let you know.
By the way, it's not only, I believe, abusive of children. It's a beautiful thing to be a boy or a girl, that there is a tiny, infinitesimally small percentage of humanity that has gender dysphoria is a tragedy, but you don't abolish the notion of gender because of that. But there's an absurdity at the root of this, because even the transgender identify as a gender. A transgender identifies as a boy or a girl. Almost nobody identifies as neither. And because of them, I'm not going to change the world. So even for the transgendered, it doesn't make sense to abolish ladies and gentlemen. The transgender does think of him or herself as a lady or a gentleman.
And in fact, in many cases, they'd be relieved that someone referred to
yes,
him as a man.
Yes, exactly.
Or a woman. Yeah.
So, be that as it may, does the digital revolution, do you think, provide opportunities to reach young people in
completely.
A way?
This is a gift from heaven. However, I am deeply worried that Google, which owns YouTube, we are in a lawsuit against them because they have put 40 of our 300 videos on the restricted list, which means libraries cannot show them, schools cannot show them, and any parent that blocks pornography can't show them. You see that? Blocks pornography. And we have a history of the Korean War. What's pornographic about that? One of the most mild-mannered historians in America, Victor Davis Hanson, gives the course.
He's a handsome man.
Victor Davis Hanson.
Victor Davis, yes, he is.
And you were just saying before that it's even customs officials in Australia that are being able to reach videos in ways that would never have happened
that's 20 years ago. That's the gift. That's why I mentioned to you I'm speaking in Romania, I think before that we got on the air. Yeah. Oh, I've gotten invitations, and it's all from young people. Do you know what I get the most from young people? And that's just what I get. The PragerU gets 50 times more than I personally get. But the thing that I most often get is, this is the first time I have heard a way of looking at reality that is not left-wing. Mm. They didn't know it existed.
Yeah.
That's a young man from Venezuela called my radio show. He listens in Venezuela. And he said, I just want you to know, I didn't know there's an alternative to the left, because in Venezuela, if you run against the left, you're just another leftist.
Yeah.
And he opened my eyes to that fact. Venezuela has been truly destroyed by the left. It was a wealthy country, relatively speaking, in Latin America. And first Chavez and now Maduro has ruined the country. There's opposition to Maduro, but it's another left winger. So in other words, the reason for the cancer is never identified. It's as if, oh, Maduro and Chavez, they're awful, but leftism is beautiful. That's the thinking. That the Pope is a left-wing thinker with Catholic theology. He is indistinguishable from any leftist, indistinguishable, but he also happens to believe in the virgin birth and in the Catholic catechism, obviously, and other things that are specifically religious. But his values are 100% Latin American left.
Mm. So let's talk about PragerU. So obviously we've been referring to it a lot, and hopefully our listeners and viewers are already fans, and if not, go out and search for it. And it's been wildly popular. Did you expect, what do you think explains this popularity, and did you sort of expect it when you started to launch?
I have a chapter in my book on happiness called Happiness is a Serious Problem. That's the book. And I have a chapter on expectations. And I said, if you have high expectations, you'll never be grateful. So drop all your expectations, and then you'll be grateful, because you can't be happy if you're not grateful. Gratitude is the mother of happiness. So I have no expectations in life. Every day I wake up healthy, I go, wow. I really mean it. I learned this in my third year at university. I studied in England, and I studied, among other things, comparative religion. And my professor was a Buddhist, an Englishman who became a Buddhist. Trevor Ling, he wrote a major work on religion, and he said the Buddhist view is all pain in life comes from desires and expectations not fulfilled. So therefore the Buddhist aim is to drop all desires and all expectations. I don't believe in dropping desires. I think it's a healthy thing. But expectations, he changed my life in a day. I've never had expectations. If someone would have said to me, Prager University will have 600 million views in a year, I would have laughed. I would have said, that's absurd. I will thank God if we have 6 million. I didn't even think 60 million, only because I just don't have expectations. Now that it has happened, it does make sense. It's very rational, non-yelling, very professionally done, tremendous amount of work in every video. There are editors after editors. I am involved in the writing of every single video. And we have terrific people giving them, terrific video. The illustrators are geniuses, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are. Yeah. There's no question about it. I give them half the credit. And Alan Estrin, the man whose idea it was, he realized 5 minutes is the perfect length. And for those who think you can't get important things across in 5 minutes, they're entirely wrong. It is an incredibly long period of time for wisdom. You can't get how red blood cells operate in 5 minutes. But we don't give courses on you know, the human body and biology. We give courses on wisdom, which of which there is none at the university.
So I've got a couple of questions about PragerU. Firstly, what is next for PragerU? And secondly, in reading about PragerU, there's a lot of pieces and a lot of noted that there wasn't much material about US President Donald Trump at the moment. Is that deliberate or is that just something that's
coming
up?
It is deliberate. We're not overtly political. We want to influence your way of thinking, and then you will translate that into the directly political. But I mean, we do have what's the difference between left and right. I give those, in fact. Mm-hmm. It's a series of courses, differences between left and right. And you can differ with me all you like, obviously, and people do. I get this very often. I'm stopped regularly by people who recognize me and say something sweet. And they say, you know, and men say this too, you know, Dennis, I really love you. And it's very sweet when they say that. I'm very touched. But you hear that all the time. And I said, actually, I don't hear that all the time. Just Google Dennis Prager and a-hole, and you will get at least 50,000 hits. So there are a lot of people who can't stand what I'm doing and saying. However, to their credit, Mother Jones, one of the leading left-wing, that's not even liberal, left-wing magazines in the United States, just did a very long piece on me and PragerU. They obviously differed with stuff, but it wasn't a hit piece, to their credit. And they noted, we're changing millennials' minds. They said, you know, if you're not aware of what PragerU was doing, you're really out of it. They are changing minds. Mm-hmm. And we want to change minds. Mm-hmm. And that's important. Otherwise, we lose.
I think, wasn't it you did a poll and 59% of people who'd watched a PragerU video changed their mind on an issue? Is that correct?
I don't remember the specific, but okay. Yes, there was that poll done.
Yep.
There was a few things asked. Did it affect the way you voted? So I don't want to misquote the number, but it was substantial.
And of course, 60% of your viewers are below 35.
And that's not our statistic. That's from Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah, extraordinary.
So you brought up just before that people sort of said you can't get these important issues across in 5 minutes, whereas I think like the sort of predominating view of online videos is the shorter the better, as if you were supposed to get it down to 2 or 3 minutes.
I think five is critical. I mean, you know, there's no law in physics that says this, but I think under five, it's possible, but we have found five is 750 words. That's 750 words is the length of a serious column. I don't think any columnist would argue that I can't influence a reader in my column. Why the hell are they writing columns then? Mm. Obviously they think that. People think you could change minds in a tweet. I have not bought that particular, I tweet in order to offer evidence of a certain point, but I'd like to develop an idea.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left, so maybe we could use that time to speak about Western civilization. If you could, what does the phrase Western civilization mean to you, and why is it so important?
Which phrase?
Western civilization.
This is so painful a topic. What civilization abolished slavery? Let's begin with that. Slavery was universal. Universal. By the way, human sacrifice was universal. The Hebrew Bible abolished human sacrifice. It was the first religious text, cultural text, to abolish it completely. It did not happen elsewhere. Then slavery. Everyone had slavery. So the question is not why did America or Britain have slavery? The question is who abolished it? It's like the question about poverty. Poverty was ubiquitous. It was universal. So the only question is not why did America or Australia or anybody else have poverty? The question is, why is there affluence? You have to explain affluence, not poverty. You have to explain the abolition of slavery, not slavery. Western civilization alone abolished slavery on any large level. Western slavery alone gave women human rights. You can go down the list of gave democracy. So I want to protect this. It values the human life is infinitely precious in Western civilization. Of course, Western civilization had anti-Western things. Communism and Nazism hated Western civilization.
Yeah.
But that Westerners went along with it is a disgrace on their name. There's no question about that. But they're not Western civilizational ideas. They were anti-West. The President of the United States was in Warsaw last year, gave a speech, said we have to protect Western civilization, and the New York Times and all of the American, and I'm sure Australian, and I'm sure British media, and I'm sure German and French, all said this really was a what they call now in America a dog whistle, a hidden sign for white supremacy. So now the left equates Western civilization with white, which is what exactly what the white supremacists say. That's the irony. The left and the white supremacists are in agreement on almost all things. The white supremacists want separate dorms for blacks. The white supremacists equate the West with white.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just curious, were the Nazis not white? How do you equate white and West? The Nazis were white, the communists were white.
The Russians for communism?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we are safeguarding, and not just Western civilization, its basis, which is Judeo-Christian. Here, by the way, I do unfortunately differ from a lot of fellow conservatives who think that religion, they think religion is as unnecessary to liberty and morality as the left does. This, so I'm fighting that battle as well. And I give a number of courses on God and morality at Prager University. And my book is just about to come out, the first volume of my commentary on the first five books of the Bible called The Rational Bible, where I want to change secular conservatives' ideas about the irrelevance of the Bible.
Absolutely. Dennis, thank you so much for your time. That was such a great chat.
It's an honor to be with you.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so thanks again to United Israel Appeal for granting us the time for the interview. And yeah, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're joined once more by IPA Campus Coordinator at the University of Sydney, Renee Gorman. Renee, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Renee, some of our long-time listeners will be aware, or just people with a passing interest in the media, would be aware that Renee is the scourge of the University of Sydney administrators. They would not like when she's up in the news, and I think that's happened again. So I'll set the scene for people who haven't been following this story. So the University of Sydney Union recently has introduced gender diversity quotas for debating teams. Now, Renee, you've been quite vocal in your opposition to these quotas. So could you tell us what these quotas are?
So pretty much these quotas demand a certain percentage of women, people of colour, which I thought was an interesting term, not really a term used in Australia, and people from non-elite schools within the debating society. So pretty much enforces what I think are discriminatory policies within the debating society, and which I'm totally against because there is already a mass of like a lot of female participation in debating. So these quotas aren't really needed for my perspective.
So you're in the Daily Telegraph today, I think, was it, about this?
Yeah, we're recording on Wednesday, so it came out today.
Wednesday, that's right, yep. So, and one of the key points in your article was that this is just absolutely and completely infantilizing to women. Do you want to expand on that a bit, please? Because this is a real, what can I say, bugbear. I don't know, we're a family podcast, so carry on, please.
I just find this completely and totally infantilizing to women because I was a state-level debater when I was in high school, and I never felt discriminated against because of my gender. Actually, I was in a team with two men, and I was always selected to go to, you know, state tryouts. My male counterparts were not selected. So I don't think that this is a problem. So the fact that they feel that they need to enforce this is kind of saying, well, women can't be heard. Women in debating aren't good enough to get up on their own. And I find that really, really insulting.
What's the quota? Is it 50%?
It's not quite 50%. I think they say out of the top teams, everyone has to be 50%. But throughout the rest of the teams, it's at least one female per team.
See, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. But, you know, my mum was a pioneer in IT in the 70s. Like, she was basically the only woman in her, you know, organisation. And she was the boss of all these men, including my father. And he would argue things haven't changed since then. classic dad gag. My nana was the first female employee in the Bort Bank during the Second World War. So if you had a discussion with them and said, you know, you guys need help to make it in these male-dominated industries because there's these, you know, big bad men in your way, it would be a very short discussion. So other women of Sydney University saying, this is terrible, we don't need your help, we're fine on our own?
I'm waiting for other women to join me in this voice, but I'm actually reaching out to the Debating Society to talk to these women because it is really unbelievable to me that women in debating, which to me are generally pretty courageous, intense women with big personalities, really feel like they need this bureaucracy stepping in to protect them. I think most women in this kind of field would feel infantilized by this. So I'm reaching out to them to try and get someone else to discuss. And also I'm reaching out to the University of Sydney Union to have a debate with me about this because they really feel that they can defend this position. They should be able to have a debate about it.
That would be a very fitting way to sort it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Will, when you do debate the University of Sydney Union, will you be having a diverse group of people to back you up? Are you going to be enforcing your own sort of quotas?
Definitely not. We're definitely going to be going by merit, but, you know, I'm probably going to be in that team, so that brings our diversity quota up.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, we're just going to choose the best speakers and whoever we don't really care what their genitals are or what race they are.
Oh, very bold positions.
Sorry to interrupt then, Renee, but don't you reckon feminism used to be about this kind of, you know, women can do just as well as men at anything, right? That's fine, and everyone agrees with that now. Don't you think that feminism is now sending the opposite message?
Oh, 100%. Another example of this really is a new gender decoder tool, which is being used by government departments and the ABC. And it is supposed to remove words that are supposed to discourage female applicants. And the words that are supposed to be too masculine are challenging, courageous, confident, decisive, determined, intellect.
Opinion. Intellect challenges women.
Yeah.
That's literally the most sexist thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's
honestly the most sexist. Where was that from?
The last two words are independent and logic.
Oh.
And the female-friendly words are committed, collaborative, trusted, gentle, pleasant, warm, support, and inclusive.
I thought we'd left this stuff behind, you know, that, you know, men had these certain qualities and women had these certain qualities, and anyway, made my point.
You know, they keep going around in circles because there's no difference between gender, according to them, but also these words are scary to women because we can't deal with challenging, courageous, confident people.
Absolutely bizarre. I want to circle back to your article in the Daily Telegraph this morning, though. So you also said that your public school debating team beat a bunch of private school debating teams in your time at school. You really had some big victories. I would love for you to give us an idea of what some of these victories were or what some of your best stories from high school debating were.
Oh, well, probably the greatest victory for us is we defeated King's College in a debate.
That is a big scalp.
This is Brunswick Secondary College, which is a very lower down public school, especially when I was attending it. And as we walked in, they were eyeing us up and down like, look at their public school uniforms. And they were dressed like little politicians. And we just absolutely destroyed them. They misquoted us, just weren't very good, and walked out with their heads down because debating is the true equalizer. It's all about who knows the topic better and who's a better speaker. It doesn't matter what school you come from.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely right. Are you going to get on the project again, Renee? That's what happened last time you took on the administration of Sydney Uni.
I haven't got they haven't contacted me yet, but you know, you always have to be careful with the project, because I don't think they really believe in the ideas of intellectual diversity or having a real discussion or debate.
But yeah, we'll definitely not. Look at the panel.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Renee, we also just had O Week across Australian universities. And I know you were, obviously, Renee, you're one of our campus coordinators, one of the people that bring the IPS message to people on campus. And you were present at O Week in Sydney. You're talking to young people, getting them involved in what the IPA is talking about. What was the kind of vibe you were getting from university students about what the IPA is talking about, or maybe the IPA in general?
Really, really positive. So we got probably a record amount of sign-ups this year. Ooh. To both the club I'm involved in and to Generation Liberty when I was signing up. And one of the main people that attracted people is I made a Jordan Peterson cutout and put it on our store. And we had so many young people coming up and be like, Jordan Peterson, I like this. What are you about? I'll sign up. So cool. That was a really positive thing. So I think that our argument is getting out there, and partly the polarisation that the left are trying to create is only helping our side, I think.
I think so, absolutely. Now, Renee, you are a bit of a Jordan Peterson fangirl. I would describe you as pretty easily.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, I think you attended his recent tour of Australia.
Yes, I did, and I got a question in, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was hoping for a completely unbiased review of Jordan Peterson's tour from you.
It was amazing. He was absolutely what you expected him to be. Really intense personality, but also really compassionate with the people who came to see him and, you know, spent so much time signing books after the show and talking to people. It was just a really, really great experience.
Awesome. And I think he signed something that wasn't a book for you, if I recall Facebook correctly.
Yeah, I brought a soft toy Kermit, or Jordan Peterson Jr., as I like to call him, and he signed that.
Very cool. He does have a Kermit voice. So, Renee, where can people go if they do want to be a part of what we're doing on campuses, and maybe people who are listening to the podcast, they're at uni at the moment, they want to get involved in what the IPA is doing, what Generation Liberty is doing, what can they do?
Well, the first thing they should do is sign up to Generation Liberty, and then also start following the IPA and Generation Liberty on social media platforms, and you'll know what we're up to. But if you're a member, you'll get direct emails and, you know, get invited to all the best events and be the most informed you can be.
Absolutely. Renee, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Thank you too, Dennis and Renee, for those interviews. Really awesome. Interesting chats. So we'll now go through some stories that have made us laugh this week slash half week. just want to see if I could annoy Pete. Didn't work. All right. So I want to lead with this one. This coming from the Vanity Fair. A French waiter named Guillaume Ray. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I looked up a YouTube video. Is that
Guillaume
it?
Ray.
Guillaume?
Guillaume.
Guillaume.
Did you speak French, Nana?
No, she knows the guy.
Personally.
Nina's mate, Guillaume Ray, French waiter in, it was fired from a Canadian restaurant for being too direct.
Yeah.
Ray filed a suit against the Vancouver restaurant, Milestones, in the British Columbia's Human Rights Tribunal for discrimination against my culture.
Yeah.
The restaurant said, they pointed to Ray's aggressive tone and nature towards the servers. They warned him on several occasions to not be so rude to customers. And he said, this is just the culture that I have from working in so many French restaurants in my day.
Yeah.
This is now a human rights issue.
And he's right.
Yeah, well, this is the argument.
Well, he's French, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. So is being rude part of French culture?
Well, he says it was drilled into him at hospitality school in France to be rude, which I don't know. I mean, I admit, this guy.
Well, the thing is, what's the standard of the rudeness?
Being too direct. Yeah. I'm apparently sure. Fireable. Sorry, we can at least know that. It's a fireable rudeness.
I'm sure the commission will get to the bottom of that. But I mean, that's certainly...
I would love that there is a legal precedent in Canada that French people are rude.
Yeah.
That's just there.
Imagine the next one.
If I can refer you back to Ray versus, what is it? Milestones. French people are jerks.
Yeah. Your Honor. It is, I mean, it is, that does reflect my experience in in Paris, you know, certain Parisian restaurants, they're pretty rude.
Yeah.
I wonder if, Australian does that mean you can't sack a French person for being lazy? Too easy. Or, you know, an Australian person for being drunk, whatever.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, if I was the judge in this one, I would King Solomon it and just go up to the
Guillaume.
And just go, like, test out his Frenchness. Just go to him, like, look, this is going to be a really long, arduous, drawn out process. It's going to be really difficult. And if he surrenders on the spot immediately, it's like, okay, clearly you're French, or we got to give it to you. Wrongful termination.
Wow. All right.
Cool. Pete, what have you got?
Done with that one. Okay, yep. So the cartoon characters. Oh, that's the wrong. No, that's the right one. Sorry. Cartoon characters. What we're talking about, of course, is the obesity policy coalition has come out during the week and saying that 90% of snack bars are unhealthy, and that the when they're marketed to children using cartoon characters, they should be banned, or they could be banned in the future, I believe.
Yeah, they called for it to be banned. Any cartoon characters that endorse a children's food.
Thank you, James, for the facts.
No worries. So what I love about this is, so the finding is, all right, so the study finds children like cartoon characters. Breaking news.
Okay,
so,
well done. Cool. Coalition.
So it's like, so therefore they've called for cartoon characters to be banned on foods they don't like, rather than it's like, maybe health foods should have cartoon characters.
That's a good idea.
That could be an idea rather than just like one. Banning.
There's one.
What one?
I'm not aware of it.
The Popeye. Did you know that?
No.
Oh, yeah, Popeye.
He actually endorsed spinach.
But was he getting paid from like the spinach lobby?
No idea.
Big spinach.
There probably has never been a lobby.
They were actually paying him, yeah. And I do eat spinach. And when I do eat spinach, I think of Popeye. So it clearly works.
There you go.
Cool. So, yeah, I love 90% of kids' snack bars are unhealthy.
Mm.
Blow me down with the feathers. Right,
yeah. You're telling me a Mars bar isn't healthy.
Yeah. Cool. My thing with this is always parents can just say no.
Like, they can.
No matter how much pesta power there is, no matter how bright that cartoon character is. Well, that's what they call it. They're like, children are... what is it? Yeah, sorry. It is shocking that manufacturers deliberately create pesta power to boost sales. Well, no, it's just how things work.
Not really.
Like, everything's pesta power. Yeah. Like, any ad is pesta power. I've got the credit card.
This is, yeah.
True. Yeah. Or change the cartoon characters to some, like, hot man or something.
Well, to get the mums on board.
To get the mums on board.
I mean, you know what? Marketing,
we're trying to limit sales.
Marketing is really targeted audience. So, like, if you can't target the children, target their parents.
You're an evil mastermind.
I know. That's why I'm here before.
You are a loss to Big Spinach.
My parents, if I was like, I want a chocolate bar, they'd just be like, is it Sunday? Because you can eat junk food on Sunday. But like, no, it's Tuesday. And I'll go, you know. There's your answer, mate.
Yeah, parents did love that. The whole, like, the very obvious question.
Just check. Just check. Because if it's Sunday, it's fine. You'd be like, you know, well, Mum, we both know it's not Sunday. That's not what I'm asking.
It's a cheat day,
Mum. Why would you ask me that question? Anyway.
Yeah, cool.
But you're right. It's the parents. You know, maybe the government. This is why the government can't cut business tax till 40-40 because they need someone somewhere is eating a paddle pop.
Maybe that's how we solve it. So instead of the BCA going for an advertising blitz, the BCA should do a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's how we get
Mr. Cuts.
Mr. Cuts. Yeah.
Cuts. Oh, no, that's
maybe he's an alligator and then he's like biting through.
Anyway.
Oh, he's a pair of scissors. Yeah. I like it.
He has a pair of scissors and hats.
Cool.
This is great, guys. We're going to get picked up by BCA.
Hope
anyway.
All right. Let's move on. So, now, famous rapper Cardi B.
Oh, now Nana's a big fan of this.
What?
Like, no, Nina doesn't know.
I don't know.
She's a massive fan.
All right. Well, anyway, so Cardi B, rapper at the moment, big hit, I think, was Bodak Yellow.
Yes, I believe so.
Cool. we both agreed that was her big hit.
Yep.
But also, she is featured on a Bruno Mars song, which is pretty much a banger called Finesse. But anyway, she's pretty big at the moment and pretty meteoric rise. So Cardi B is starting to adjust to a life as a high bracket taxpayer. She put a video on Instagram. It's very expletive laden, so I'm not going to play the clip.
I usually do play the clip.
So I'm just going to quote here from sort of a summary of it. So Cardi B noticed that she's paying a 40% tax rate, not getting much for it. She asked for accountability, noting that, quote, when you donate to a foreign kid from a foreign country, they give you updates of what you're doing with your donation, like World Vision. So maybe the government should do that as well. By contrast, Cardi B has no idea what Uncle Sam is doing with her, quote, effing tax money. She speculates about possible uses for government revenues. Blah, blah, blah. And B wants transparency, demanding receipts.
Yeah.
All really good ideas, by the way. So
what a libertarian hero.
Yeah, so blast it out. Find Bodak Yellow, whatever it sounds like, and blast it out.
Yeah.
Now, the Washington Post, Philip Bump, one of the columnists there, who I'm just going to go ahead and call a big nerd, wrote an article in response to Cardi B's Instagram post, which is your first inkling that this is a bit of a waste of time for Philip and any reader. Probably a podcast, but I'm having fun with it. So he decided to go through, okay, Cardi B, let's discuss where your taxpayer dollars is going to. Use two graphs to respond to a rapper's Instagram post. So that journalism degree really looking good. But anyway, what the reason this caught my eye was because he is so condescending to Cardi B. It is the biggest, like, you know, this word gets thrown around so much. It is the biggest mansplaining you have ever seen in your
actual
life.
Actual mansplaining.
So here's like the first. First of all, Cardi is blaming Uncle Sam, quote, that is the federal government. So also mansplaining it to us. Like, I know what Uncle Sam is, mate, for things that aren't Sam's fault. It is true that last month New York City was voted the dirtiest in America, which is what something Cardi B brought up, which isn't hugely surprising, but that's not a federal issue. It's a city issue. My own emphasis there, but you can get the picture. And then he goes on and it's like, spending on prisons closer to the mark. It's really annoying us. But then here's his last two paragraphs, right? Where's the money going? So mostly social programs plus the military and interest. Combined, those four things make up 85% of federal spending. These are your receipts. As for the dirty streets of New York, you want to contact Mayor Bill de Blasio, not Uncle Sam. They're not good points, mate. Like, we're all aware of where things go. Cardi B's asking, what are you doing with it?
Yeah, it's like, this is a cancel issue. Oh, you got it, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, Miss B, you're fine. Get stuffed.
Yeah, but also, like, you know, oh, it's going to the military. Is it going to the military effectively? Like, wasn't there, like, $800 million missing from the...
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so he really went for the whole, won't this be funny taking a rapper to task on matters of economics.
Yeah, this stupid young
person.
Big old
nerd. Yeah.
This stupid young person who's worried about tax. I'll show her.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So, speaking of big old nerds, probably seen this guy's a nerd. Martin Selmayr, he's the new Secretary General of the European Commission.
Oh, get him on the program. Can't wait to speak to him.
Would light up, question time. So, he is new Secretary General of the EU. He's come out of nowhere, so obviously people are hitting Wikipedia to look up who he is.
Do you know how old he is? Looks pretty young.
He looked pretty young. So, he's now been busted, though, for editing his own Wikipedia page. Wow. It is pretty funny. So, this one was found by Steerpike, a pretty good columnist for The Spectator in the UK.
Devilishly handsome.
Devilishly handsome.
Great tennis player.
Tells really good stories at parties. You should seriously invite him.
Legend on the cans. Anyway, sorry, James.
Legend on the cans. This EU General Secretary, man, legend on the cans.
What a bloke.
Anyway, so here's what he actually did do, which is not as good as that. So thank you for leading with it, Pete. Changes made to Selmayr's Wikipedia page in the last few weeks include that he has stressed he is, quote, consistently denied leaking details about the Brexit negotiations. Credited Selmayr with working closely with sufficient process agreement on Brexit. So, like, really bigging up, like, how good he was. And removed a reference to Selmayr's grandfather being convicted of war crimes. Like, we'll just put that one to the side.
Then that didn't happen.
Yeah. So Wikipedia busted it. If you go to the Wikipedia page, it might be removed by the time you guys listen to it, but it's a major contributor to this article appears to have a close connection with its subject.
You
reckon, mate? It may require cleanup to comply with Wikipedia's neutral content policies.
You can't change your own Wikipedia because you get caught.
You will get caught 100% of the time.
Yep.
Don't do that.
Don't do
that's
that.
The big lesson out
no,
of this.
No,
like,
leave your Wikipedia page alone.
I don't even have a page. Oh. Should I start my own page?
No. Do not do that. Learn from this man. That would be the worst thing you could do.
Okay,
that's not the takeout, man.
All right, cool. Do we have any more?
No.
All right. Well, that is it for this. Oh, bit of housekeeping. Well, not really housekeeping, just shameless self-promotion.
Danny's at the back. Sorry, that's the usual house. carry on, James.
Picked it up.
Bit of shameless self-promotion here. So Melbourne Comedy Festival now underway. If you guys are in Melbourne, you do want a good night out, I will be performing in Improv Against Humanity. Can't exactly remember where, but look it up online.
The Tickle Pit?
At the Tickle Pit. I don't know where that is. So the Tickle Pit and 450 Elizabeth Street, Melbourne, I want to say. But anyway, look it up online, Improv Against Humanity. We're running from today, which is Wednesday.
Stop looking at me. I don't know when your buddy shows up.
Today, Wednesday to sometime next week or maybe the week after. But anyway, look it up. It's a good night out. Have fun. But thank you guys for listening to this podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening on iTunes, SoundCloud, or our website. Maybe you're listening through, hey, what did I miss? The IPA's weekly email, whatever way you are listening. Thank you so much. But if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you are leaving that 5-star review. Helps us out with the ratings. And you can also put in a tip for the show. Maybe you've seen a story. Maybe you've got some suggestions for Pete. I know I certainly do. And make sure you leave them there. So, Nina, how can people become members if they wish to be so?
Yeah, just visit our website, ipa.org.au, and click on that join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become a member and you can receive exclusive invitations to our events and also access to our weekly emails, including Hey, What Did I Miss?
Cool. All right. See you guys next week.
See ya.
Yeah.